If once again you fall into this place where you're beating yourself up for having OCD, or you hate yourself for having OCD, that we want to, gently shift ourselves back into this place of kindness. And, we don't have to be harsh or mean with ourselves if we keep falling back into a self-critical place.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 214 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I interview Mike Heady. Mike is a licensed clinical professional counselor and associate director at the Anxiety and Stress Disorders Institute of Maryland. Mike came on the show to talk about having OCD and dating. So this isn't a relationship OCD focused episode, although there is a relationship OCD question in it later on. This is primarily for anyone with OCD. I wanted to do this episode because I don't want people who have OCD to feel like they're not good enough to date, or OCD will stop them being in a relationship or can stop them dating. So I wanted to start this discussion with Mike. It's a huge topic, but I wanted to get the ball rolling to kind of put some things out there, to offer up some ways to think about dating when you have OCD, if it's been an issue for you. I don't want to assume it has, because it may have not affected dating or relationships in any way, and that's great if that's the case. If not, hopefully this episode can start to get that ball rolling, help you think about ways of addressing some stuff and working through some stuff if you have found that OCD has been a hindrance, whether it actually has or whether it's been the fear that OCD would be a hindrance for you. So in it, Mike and I discuss his therapy story, dating while having OCD, realizing that you aren't defective and you don't need to be free of OCD before you start dating, when and when not to disclose that you have OCD, that disclosure is a form of intimacy, what detail to share, disclosure of taboo content, feeling ready to date or not, dealing with a breakup due to OCD, when OCD latches on to dates. In the case of relationship OCD, we discussed that a little bit. Learning to have fun on dates, dealing with the shame that may come around having an OCD diagnosis that you may feel about that, feeling worthy of dating, being kind to yourself, living with uncertainty, and much, much more. Now, like I said a minute ago, this is a huge topic, and this definitely isn't advice. I just wanted an open discussion with Mike to see if we could offer any insight and get that ball rolling for people who maybe struggled in dating and obviously don't want to and want to start to build those relationships. So I hope this helps you. I hope it gets the ball rolling for you. And without further ado, here is Mike. On the podcast today, I have Mike Heady. Mike is a licensed clinical professional counselor and associate director at the Anxiety and Stress Disorders Institute of Maryland. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Oh, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, it's good to have you here. And yeah, I guess before we get started, it'd be good to hear your therapy story. You know, what got you into working with OCD?
Sure. So that's a big question. Like most things in my life, if I look backwards, hindsight, it's 2020. Mm. So it looks like how I got into being a therapist was all planned out, but I assure you it wasn't. I knew two things about myself, which was I loved puzzles. I loved solving mysteries, figuring out how things worked. And I seemed to have a knack for listening and talking with people, sort of being a confidant or a mentor. So when I took my first undergrad class in psychology, I guess I figured out the types of puzzles and mysteries I wanted to work on. So therapy seemed to be a good way to go about doing that. Specifically working with anxiety disorders and OCD, that started after grad school. So I had a looking for jobs after graduation. I got a call from my CBT professor who let me know that there was a unpaid mentorship with the Anxiety and Stress Disorders Institute. And I knew I really wanted to learn about anxiety disorders because you don't get a ton of that training in grad school. It's more basic. Mm. And a lot of the jobs that were available were substance use disorder jobs, and that really wasn't my area of interest so much. So I applied. Didn't think I was going to get it, but I did. Nice. And it was like once I sat down at the couple of sessions with some people who had OCD and started doing ERP and watching how this stuff actually worked, you know, people started getting better. It was incredibly rewarding. So that's when I started to realize I really loved working with this stuff. And I started noticing that the way OCD works fascinates me. That not only which treatment helps, but why that treatment helps really fascinates me. That interaction, that dynamic between the client and yourself during an exposure fascinates me. So anyway, here I am just about 13 years later, and I don't seem to get bored or tired talking about it or thinking about it or treating it.
Oh, that's really good. Yeah, thank you for sharing your story. And I can completely relate how I look at therapy as almost like, as you said, solving a mystery, or I'm not particularly big on puzzles, so I see it more like detective work. You're trying to really figure something out and, yeah, solve something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same whether you're a therapist or the client. You're in a way, you're trying to figure it out on yourself.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, okay, cool. So today we're going to talk about dating, specifically with OCD. Mm-hmm. And I guess for clarity, this isn't a relationship OCD-focused episode, but I'm sure that will come up at some point. But it's just dating is something a lot of people do in their life with or without OCD. And obviously with OCD, that sometimes can become a bit more complicated. So I guess to lay out my motivation, I wanted to do this episode because I don't want anyone with OCD to feel that they can't date or have that experience in life. So hopefully this can go some way to removing any blocks they experience.
Yeah, that would be great if we could help people realize that they don't have to sort of get better before they date, or that they don't have to sort of keep believing that they're somehow defective. Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a good point. I think, do you get many people that kind of say, I can't date until I'm better, or until I'm not doing compulsions anymore, or anything like that?
Yeah, I get some clients that say that. I think it's not so much something that they express outwardly, just a belief they have about themselves. You know, they tend to have their own stigma, their own bias against OCD. They feel broken, they feel weird, and that makes them sort of apprehensive, I think, and hold off on dating. And then, of course, there's the whole idea of trying to guess what this other person might think about them when they find out. Will they accept me? Will they love me? And of course, you can't know that for sure, even if you don't have OCD, exactly. Let alone knowing something for sure if you do have OCD.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, dating and relationships in their early stages are very much based in uncertainty. And anxiety and all this other uncomfortable stuff with or without OCD.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think if you have OCD, you're probably going to be anxious on the date. And if you don't have OCD, the first date, you're probably going to be very anxious anyway. So I think that's an important thing to clarify. But I guess it's a problem when that anxiety doesn't go away. So what are some issues that come up with your clients around dating?
Great question. So the typical issues tend to be around, I'd rank them sort of disclosure issues. Like, you know, if I've decided to go out on a date, do I disclose? How do I disclose? When do I disclose? So a lot of disclosure kind of questions show up. Mm. You know, if I'm ready to date is another kind of question that can pop up, and how to know for sure often, if I'm ready to date. Those are the typical ones. Sometimes you get people who've been broken up with because they've had OCD.
Okay.
Or the OCD interfered in the relationship and sort of bounce back from that and date again. Mm. That can be a common thing we see.
Okay. Yeah. So let's take those one at a time. So with the disclosure, sort of when and where and how, and yeah, just anything you want to say on that.
Sure. So one thing I start off talking with my clients about is that romantic relationships in particular are wonderful breeding grounds for uncertainty, for sticky thinking. And I think that's because those relationships not only are sort of basic drives for many of us, we want that romantic connection, not just sex, but intimacy with another person. So we have this drive for it. And they're also very conditional relationships, and they are optional relationships. So already, like we mentioned before, they're kind of full of uncertainty, anxiety for someone without OCD. And then you'd add OCD on top of that, and it becomes incredibly difficult. I think this necessarily talks to the issue of, if I'm dating on a date, which date do I disclose to this person that I'm with that I have OCD? I think we get two groups. We get the people who are completely terrified. They absolutely want to keep this quiet. They don't want to disclose at all. Then we have the second group. I think the second group's going to be the one we talk more about, which is the ones that feel this overwhelming burden to disclose. And this often shows up on the first or second date or hangout or whatever it is going on. This overwhelming urge to sort of inform, and I'll put that in air quotes. I know your people listening can't see me make the air quotes. They're not really informing their person. They're unburdening, right? They're confessing, they're checking or reassurance seeking. Otherwise they're doing a compulsion, and that seems to be really what's driving the bus for a lot of people in the in that early disclosure that's based upon this urge or this overwhelming feeling. So we want them to understand that's not sort of the foot we want to start on, first and foremost, is disclosure, because we feel this urgency to unburden ourselves. So I think that's probably one of the first distinctions I like to make with people, is sort of what's driving the bus on your want to disclose.
Yeah, good point.
Stop me if I'm rambling here.
No, go for it.
I like to remind people that OCD is not a contagious disease, and that your disclosure of it's not a public health issue. And I think that this speaks to perspective, and this is something I'm always angling for, is that cognitive shift in perspective. And it's a somewhat simplistic rule that I give my clients to follow, but it's, if you're disclosing out of urgency, it's probably you relieving your anxiety. So that's the first thing I go over with them, is this urgency is not a public health issue. What I mean by that is you're not required to disclose it early. The second thing I talk to my clients about often is that disclosure is actually a form of intimacy. And if we think about it in that context, it's intimacy is important, and I think disclosure is important, but it most certainly isn't urgent. And that can help us slow down and be thoughtful about how we want to do this. And I think this is where context matters. If disclosure is a form of intimacy, we want to try to approach it that way. And if you think of it like, the relationship has to earn this disclosure. It's far too often that the clients experience disclosure from a standpoint of an apology, right? To their partner, something like, "I'm sorry, I have this diagnosis. Do you still want to be with me?" And that's a difficult sort of way to start off this process with someone. And I think this gets at another distinction that I think is important here, is secrecy versus privacy. So if we're approaching disclosures as if you're revealing a secret, as if you're apologizing for a secret that you have, it's smuggling in all of this guilt and all of this shame. And your OCD doesn't need to be a secret, but it is actually private information. And disclosing private information to a partner, I think, is an indication of intimacy, a signal that you wish to deepen the relationship. It's not something that we're asking forgiveness for.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that gets at what one of the disclosure questions, which I think is more like when to disclose. And I, you know, something else we could say about when to disclose is, you know, if you're casually dating somebody, you know, you're kind of friends with benefits or casually dating someone, you might still get that overwhelming urge to disclose your OCD. You might have this belief that I have to be honest, I have to be open. And really that's, you know, the honesty is really more compulsive at that point. I think it's, you know, who am I disclosing this information for? Am I doing it to make myself feel less distressed, less anxious, less uncertain? Or is it really supposed to be helping our relationship grow? So in sort of like casual relationships, I like to tell people that not everyone in our life is privy to our private information. Right? And the need to disclose within casual relationships is usually if the OCD is overt or obvious to the other person. They can't help but see it. So you might as well add some context to it, some education to it. And in a related way, if you're taking some kind of, say, medication for your OCD and it's having some impact on your sex life, it might be, it could be a way of disclosing, although you don't have to disclose the details of the OCD or even necessarily the diagnosis in that case, just that this medication seems to mess with my libido or my sexual functioning. And that's, I think that's sort of like the level of disclosure for casual relationships. It doesn't need to be deepening in intimacy necessarily.
Yeah. Really, really good point. And I like the point about, let's say, dating because you want a long-term relationship. Let's take that scenario. The bit you said about intimacy, I think is really a good point because, you know, I do actually have a diagnosis of IBS, but like I'm not going to say that on the first date, you know?
Right, right.
It's, you know, talking about that stuff is not really first date material. Not I'm ashamed of it, I just know that there's a time and a place to reveal that, and as I would become more intimate with someone, then it's okay, they need to know more about me and this is not a big deal. But you know,
that's a really great point. I think, you know, we don't tend to have this relationship to disclosing other medical conditions, you know, diabetes or chronic headaches, with the same kind of urgency and unburdening and confessing. It's not often we're not apologizing for it. And I think if we start off with this sort of, I feel ashamed by this diagnosis, I'm apologizing for this diagnosis, it can feed into how the other person starts thinking about your diagnosis, and that's the first impression they get is shame and apology.
That's true. If you're embarrassed by whatever the diagnosis is, they're going to pick that up and they're going to feel awkward, whereas if you're able, I know it's not easy, I guess, to share it in a way that this is what it is, it's kind of, it affects me, I'm dealing with it, then they'll react in a way of cool, probably won't even think anything of it and change the subject onto something else.
Exactly.
And
the phrase, I think I came up with this, but maybe I stole it from somebody, who knows, but I like to call it, we're shooting for a confident nonchalance in the way you approach it. And of course that presumes that you have a relationship to your OCD that is sort of confidently nonchalant. And that's not where everyone is when they're dating sometimes, but that's a direction we like to head in.
Okay, excellent. So that's, is there anything else on disclosure you want to say?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I could probably say a whole lot on disclosure. One thing I like, I'm just thinking about how I talk to my clients about disclosure. I describe disclosure, you know, as it's always a risky thing to do because we don't really know what the outcome of the disclosure is going to be. And, you know, I do think it's a healthy risk. That's one of the discriminations I make. I think it's, if we think of it like tolerating uncertainty in the pursuit of what's meaningful. You know, hopefully the meaningful thing here is a partner that knows us and accepts us. And so it's a healthy risk and it's worth it in that way. So I think that's one thing I try to really lean into with it is like, you can't be guaranteed. There's no foolproof, you know, error-free way to disclose to your partner that they're going to understand and be empathic and be compassionate. But it's a healthy risk regardless. If you really are pursuing what's important to you, in this case, that the partner knows you and accepts you.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction. And I'm going to ask it again. Anything else on disclosure you want to say?
Disclosure is an ongoing process. I don't see it as a single event situation where you have to sit someone down at a table and be like, I have something to tell you, and then spill everything and now you've done your disclosure. I think of disclosure as sort of like, it can be in levels, you know. Let's assume there's some sort of more than casual dating relationship going on and you're opening it up to disclosure about your OCD. It doesn't have to be all of the nitty gritty details about your content or your theme. It can be, I have this thing, and this is how it acts, and this is how it feels, and this is what you're going to see. And maybe this is how you can be helpful to me. Right. And I think this just, this dovetails nicely into how disclosure for taboo content of OCD is actually quite different from disclosure of more understood or more accepted types of content. Because I do see that there is a difference in the disclosure there. I can elaborate on that one. So I think of this one as you kind of need to read the room. How well do you know this person? How much, you know, what have they said about the OCD disclosure in a more generic way before you got into the more taboo content? I can share an anecdote that kind of gets into this one. So years ago I was working with this person who, you know, showed up to my office in tears, and he was terrified that he was going to become a serial killer because he had, and this is, you know, I think everyone treats OCD, has seen this case before, that he had had these intrusive images that he was going to stab his girlfriend to death. I think they'd been dating maybe 4 or 5 months, and he'd done all the typical compulsive avoidances. He threw out his knives. He stopped cooking with her. They started eating in like restaurants that had like no cutlery or only like Chipotle, places where you might have plastic cutlery, stuff like that. And I think what she was thinking is that he's backing away from the relationship and he wants out. And he was thinking, I'm protecting her. And once he realized this was OCD, after we had our consult and he had this sort of like relief moment, there's a name for this. Of course, that went away after the first session. He sort of thinking maybe I was wrong in my diagnosis. But he said to me at the end of the first session, you know, so I'm going to go home and I'm going to tell my girlfriend that this is what this is, that I've been having OCD and this idea, thoughts of images really of stabbing her to death. And I said, whoa, does she know that any of this is going on? And he says, no. And I said, so maybe we don't start with, I've been having images of hacking you to pieces. And to slow it down a little bit. And so what we did in this particular case, which I think can be a good analog for other cases, was slowly gave him materials to help educate both of them together about what OCD is in a more generic way. And over time, you know, the goal was to not only have the client understand what OCD is, to really get it, you know, that content is garbage, to get, have her get it too. Is, I think, especially with taboo themes, is can the partner be in on the diagnosis with you? Like, I get it. I know what OCD is. I know that this content is for suckers. It's garbage. Mm-hmm. That's the tact I take with that. So I think it's a little bit more involved than sort of disclosure of generic OCD or other themes that might be a little bit more understood by the general population.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. Yeah, like you said, you don't have to disclose the theme straight away. You can just say, I have OCD, and it gives me anxious, it gives me anxiety, and I have some troublesome thoughts sometimes. And you could be as vague as that. And I wash my hands as the compulsion, or I check a door, you know, like whatever it is. And then, as you say, work up once they understand that the content is kind of nonsense. And I guess also by that point, you know, you could be, it's just an example, but like 3 months into the relationship. And then by that point, they have, or 6 months, and they have a good sense of your character. So when you say that this is the content or this is the actual worry, they're not shocked because they know that you would never harm a fly. Or that, you know, so they know the,
Yeah, the context matters a great deal. Yeah. And, you know, and taking our time, slowing down, having perspective, is I think wise in general. Especially in you know, because we really just don't know. It's sort of like, you know, telling a coworker your OCD is uncertain. And they're not going to know you the way your partner knows you. Mm-hmm. So again, just being thoughtful and slowing down a little bit, can be a useful way of approaching this. And that way you understand that you're not being driven by your emotions to disclose. You're not being driven in this idea of, you know, my disclosure is about running away from my anxiety. Rather, you want your disclosure to be about running towards something you value.
Mm. Yeah, really good point. Okay, so then one of the other sort of issues that comes up for you when working with people is they say whether they're not ready, they feel, am I ready today, am I not? What's some of the talking points around that?
Yeah, that's good. I think it depends on sort of, I guess I'd say, case by case situation. Like, yeah. what are we talking about? But in a general sense, I would say, you know, are you entering into a relationship because, you know, it's important for you to pursue this value of connecting with another person, of valuing another person, and that you're in a place to sort of be able to be there for them, and function inside of a dynamic like that. So there's some exploration around sort of what's driving you to enter into a relationship. Mm. But usually I take people at face value. You know, if you want a relationship, you feel ready for a relationship, it's usually because they've found someone, or they think they found someone that they might have interest in. Yeah. And they want to know if they can or they should pursue that. And I'm always on the end of, yeah, like, why not? What a great opportunity for exposure into a whole lot of things. I don't think I ever tell people don't date, unless I think the motivation is really to sort of escape something else, you know, like
loneliness.
And even then I don't think I'd be like, don't date. Like, who am I to tell someone not to date? Yeah. I would help them sort of look at sort of the motivations behind that, yeah, and the functions of dating. But yeah, I take people at face value for that. If they're ready to date, I just help them go through it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been out of the dating game for a really long time, so it's not like I have any tips or tricks on how to date. I don't know, the internet. Yeah. but yeah, I think I think dealing with a lot of the uncertainty, the anxiety, the ambivalence, a lot of it has to do with sort of how they're identifying at that moment. You know, if you're really stuck in this idea that I'm not a catch, you know, for whatever reason, but for, you know, because we're talking about OCD, I'm not a catch because I have OCD. I'm a handful. I'm a burden. You know, I'm weird. I'm quirky. No one's going to want that. And we want to go after that, and sort of reframe that and shift over and get that person to change their relationship to their OCD in a more fundamental way.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then one of the other points was, you know, they've broken up with, and the reason the partner said was because of the OCD. Maybe they were doing too many compulsions and the partner couldn't cope, or it could be a million and one reasons why they would use that as an excuse for breaking up. But I guess how would you work with someone? Because obviously that they're going to feel very hurt by that, and feel like it's probably going to happen again.
Yeah, and it might, and we can't tell them that it won't, because like you said, sometimes it could be a million reasons and they just picked that one. Yeah. But it could have actually been largely because there was just so much compulsion, so much pulling that person into the rules that the OCD has, and that person, you know, didn't sign up for that or got tired of that. So we would sort of be honest about that and say maybe there is something that was going on, and that's another thing for us to work on. Grist for the mill. It's something to work on, and I think it's a lesson. What did we learn about how we can change the way we require accommodation from a partner? Maybe it was the thing was we weren't bringing our partner on as a teammate. Because we can't really control the other side of that equation, which was the person who broke up with them or left them. Maybe they didn't want to be a teammate, you know? And all we can do is get this person to understand that their OCD isn't something that prohibits them. Their diagnosis isn't something that prohibits them from dating, from being loved, from connecting with people. And in fact, that we can work on this ongoing while you're in a relationship. And when the relationship's ready, we can use that as a way to team up against the OCD. Mm. I feel almost like all things OCD comes back to tolerating uncertainty in the pursuit of your values. And here we are again, bumping into that.
Yeah, really good point. And then one other thing, I guess, is relationship-themed OCD. So for a lot of people, from what I've read over the years is when they're in a relationship, that seems to be when the OCD attacks it. And but I've also heard from many people that it starts from date one, from the moment they go on that first date. They're not necessarily invested in this person yet, but the anxiety floods in. And, you know, from my own experience, near enough every date I ever went on, you know, the first date was actually fine. It was between first and second date is when it hit me. So I guess, yeah, what sort of things come up around that for you?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head that the relationship OCD, if it's there, it's going to hit probably pretty quick in the relationship. And I think in the situation here is, you know, patience and time is our friend. We really don't want to be acting on our emotions in these situations, because it's almost always going to be a compulsion. And so I tell my clients here, you know, whether it is your obsessing about, you know, if you find them as attractive as you should find them, or if you think that there is into you as you are into them, or maybe we're not compatible because of, you know, something that person said, or the way they laughed or didn't laugh at a joke. And of course, relationship OCD can be, you know, so much more complex than that. Yeah. And the idea is to not make any decisions for a period of time, you know, about things like, you know, I don't need to make a decision about ending this relationship or checking in about something with this relationship for weeks or months. And I think that comes back to tolerating that uncertainty. And I think after time passes, you might actually have an opportunity to disclose to the partner the OCD, and move forward from there, you know, bringing them up to speed on what it is and how it impacts the relationship and how accommodation can show up. So I guess the main thing I help people with relationship OCD is A, if they know they have it, what it looks like, how it shows up, being just as clever. You know, I can see the hundreds of ways that the OCD is going to impact this relationship from a mile away. And I need to sort of sit with that tension. I need to sit with that distress and that uncertainty. And even if the question feels completely reasonable, I want to put some time to it. Like, I don't need to answer that right now. I'm going to give that a couple of weeks. I'm going to give that even a couple of months. Of course, I feel like I have to say that I'm excluding any obvious signs of emotional abuse or physical abuse or, you know, stuff like that. Obviously, those are exceptions where
any actual sort of big red flags.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah, I always bring it back to values on that. I always say, one of your values is the protection of animals, and you just love animals, and you know you never want to see any of them come to any harm, and then you know you're on a date or your partner abuses animals, then there's clearly a clash of values here in the relationship.
Right.
So that's not OCD. That's a very big, obvious red flag. Is kind of. Unfortunately, it's not always that clear cut, but I kind of use that as an example of.
Right, it's kind of like you know, what if my partner isn't as attracted to me, versus they've said to me that they're not as attracted to me, right? The one is a much bigger red flag, and the other one is a what if. And that doesn't mean it isn't a problem. It just means that the decision tree would say, okay, this, what if this is, sounds a lot like anxiety talking, maybe I should slow it down.
Yeah.
You know, treat it like my OCD. I often say to people, you know, if we treat it like it's OCD and turns out over time it wasn't OCD, it's still the problem that you can work on. It's something you can try to resolve, whether that's ending the relationship or not. But if you don't treat it like OCD, you could end up, you know, engaging in compulsions and accommodation behaviors right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point as well. Sometimes there's things with your partner that you know not going to be 100% compatible. There's always going to be the odd thing that grinds you a bit. But that's part of relationships. If you want to be in it, you work on those things and you grow together. And definitely with relationship OCD, sometimes that nuance can be quite hard to grip. It definitely was for me. But one thing I guess I'll share, as this isn't in any way therapeutic advice, just my experience. People can take from it what they will. But I went into dates very much like, I need to figure this out. Is this person right for me? Are they the one, so to speak, and all this? And there was so much pressure. And arguably what I should have been trying to shift my mindset to of, how can I have fun on this date? How can I help this human opposite me have a fun time as well? You know, and putting the emphasis on just having and enjoying my life as opposed to figuring out this big philosophical question.
Yeah. Well, don't sell yourself short, Stu. That's a wonderfully therapeutic thing to suggest to someone. And as you were saying that, it just popped into my head something that I tell people with social anxiety that I think applies very well to relationship OCD is, you know, if you think about, I gave people a thought experiment, like, let's pretend you had a conversation with someone you'd never met before, and it was an amazing conversation, and it just seemed to go, you seemed to get on really well, and you walked away and you felt, wow, I really want to talk to that person again. You know, what was it about that interaction that made you want to come back for more. And it wasn't sort of the more materialistic things. They weren't the funniest person or the most attractive person or the whatever, right? It often boils down to that person was genuinely listening to me and they gave a crap. Mm. They expressed interest. And that's a skill that you can use when interacting with people, because so often people with social anxiety, and I imagine this is true with OCD as well, is that you're so much in your head trying to calm down the storm of anxiety and uncertainty that you're not truly present for the other person. Mm. Right? You might be scanning them to see what their nonverbals are or reading their face to understand if they're telling you the truth or other types of checking behaviors, or you're trying to calm your own internal world down before you can talk and say very interesting things. But what if we were to sort of reverse that and say that your job isn't to be calm and talk to this other person. Your job isn't to be without chatter or noise in your head and talk to the other person. Your job truthfully is to make that other person feel like you genuinely listen to them and that you gave a crap mm-hmm. about what they were saying. Like, how well do you hit those two points for people? And that's the homework, right? Is to allow all that anxiety to be in your body and choose to focus on those outward skills. And I think that there can be some analog to OCD treatment there too, especially with relationship OCD.
Mm. Yeah. Really good point. Let's go on to the next question. So this is just going back to general OCD again. Obviously, can include mm-hmm. relationship OCD as well. But I can imagine for some people, there's very much, depending on their, as you said earlier, their viewpoint of their condition or their diagnosis, there can be a lot of self-stigma and shame around the diagnosis. And potentially, maybe they may not feel good enough for someone else. They may not feel worthy of dating or the person they're going to go on a date with. I guess, what words of hope for these people, words of wisdom would you have?
Hope and wisdom. I try to remind people that, you know, your person is out there. And I don't believe it's just like a one person for you. There's probably many people that could be good for you. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, your willingness to be available, even if you've been hurt, your willingness to be available, even if you internally have a sense of that you're defective or broken, your willingness to be available to that and I think that gets communicated to other people. I think being closed off, you know, wearing headphones and sunglasses and staring at your phone is a signal to people to not approach you. And I think that in a way, being unavailable to other people can also come through. You know, I don't know that I've given that one a whole lot of elaboration. So I bounce into a lot of Kristen Neff's work on compassion. You know, Chris Germer, Kristen Neff, there's a few other people, and this idea of compassion and self-compassion, and more importantly, and this idea of kindness to yourself. Like, you don't have to be self-critical and mean if once again you fall into this place where you're beating yourself up for having OCD or you hate yourself for having OCD, that we want to, you know, gently shift ourselves back into this place of kindness. And, you know, we don't have to be harsh or mean with ourselves if we keep falling back into a self-critical place. And I think all of that, you know, the idea of pursuing self-compassion, the idea of shifting your relationship to OCD so that it truly does, I come back to that idea of confident nonchalance. We really want to get to or move in a direction of having that kind of relationship with our diagnosis. And we put those things together, self-compassion, pursuing confident nonchalance, changing your relationship to OCD. I think that can stimulate a certain willingness, a certain confidence maybe, that makes you more available to relationships. Of course, once you get into a relationship, here comes more uncertainty.
Yeah, that's true. Cool, no, thank you. So, more general question now, not necessarily around dating, which is just general advice for living with uncertainty.
General advice for living with uncertainty. Well, it's a skill that you can develop, and it doesn't always have to be the uncertainty around incredibly sticky or difficult things. Tolerating even minor uncertainties and really sort of tuning in and sitting with that, you know, that tension that shows up about really wanting to know, about wanting to escape from this distress. I think that's important. I think it's also really, maybe really basic, but really important to recognize that uncertainty is a feeling. You know, it's not a fact. And that feelings, and I forget the psychologist who has this quote, so my apologies to her. But it's, you know, feelings or emotions are data. They're not directives. They're not unimportant. We don't have to be hostile towards our uncertainty or any other of our emotions. We don't have to dismiss them. We don't have to ignore them. But we can, you know, have a more productive or helpful relationship to them. And I think it starts with being able to sort of label it and categorize it, like uncertainty. Okay, so I live with uncertainty all the time, here, here, and here. And it doesn't feel great, but it's also something that doesn't, you know, stick around for, I would say it comes in waves. It doesn't stick around forever.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it did. Yeah. Thank you. And then another general question, just words of hope for those with OCD.
Words of hope for OCD. Treatment works. This stuff gets better. And even if people who have tried sort of, you know, people will often come into my office and say, I've tried ERP, I've tried CBT. That doesn't mean that it doesn't work. You know, sometimes people have nuanced ways of delivering this treatment. So I say, keep at it, keep working on it. You know, we don't want to treat sort of OCD as like this, let's go after the whack-a-mole of themes, or, you know, we want to look at this as a fundamental attitude shift towards our anxiety and our OCD in general. So words of hope, it gets better. It's treatable. Even if you felt as though your first pass at this didn't work, I'd say keep going.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's say you could pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self. What would you tell him?
I'm smiling because I knew you were going to ask that question. You know, I think I'd probably tell myself that there, a lot of the stuff in your head is noise. And you don't need to sort of hash it all out now. You don't need to feel resolved and better first before you go do something. I might have also said, talk to more people and go to more parties.
Yeah. Nice. And then somewhat similar question. You've got a billboard. What do you want written on that billboard?
Yes, the famous billboard question. I really wanted to have like a killer answer to this. And I got incredibly sort of lost in how to answer that question. So, what I decided on as an answer to that question, I won't pretend that I'm making it up on the spot. I have thought about this. A client who I'm working with, loves, inspirational quotes. And almost every session she comes in, pulls up Pinterest and says, I got another one for you, Mike. And she says, pain is inevitable. suffering is optional. And then, of course, she said, I guess this ERP crap really works. So maybe I could edit that down a little bit and say something along the lines of pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. ERP works.
Yeah. Nice. I like it. And is there anything else that I haven't asked you today that you wish you could have shared?
I don't think so. I think we could do several podcasts about dating with OCD, because I think there's a lot of facets with it, but I think we covered some really important ground. I think disclosure and stigma and all that are, you know, not really talked about, not really written about. And I think they're common questions we get. So I'm very thankful that you had this podcast.
No, thank you for coming on and sharing your experience. It's been greatly helpful.
Yeah, well, glad to do it.
So there you have it. Thank you to Mike for his time and for the discussion. And thank you to you guys for listening. Happy dating if that's what you want to do. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.